The mid-20th century still has a powerful hold on how Americans remember and sometimes mythologize our past. Two films and theaters now have two seemingly different views of the 1950s, one a warm and endearing immigrant story, the other a tale of political persecution in the heat of the Cold War. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The fall movie season is offering up consistently good choices for cinemagoers, and today we look at two particularly strong first-run features, the films Brooklyn and Trumbo. To discuss these films, I'm happy to have back on the program Gene Creel, frequent collaborator, I might add.
Morning, Jack.
Good morning. Well, we've been watching a lot of movies lately, two very good ones among many at the theaters right now. This is the fall film season, which everybody's currying the awards and favors. You were particularly taken with Brooklyn.
Right. Brooklyn. It's a beautiful film and a beautiful story set in the 1950s. The film opens in Ireland, where Eilish Lacey is preparing to emigrate to America. She's unable to find gainful employment in the small village where she lives with her sister and widowed mother. A priest in Brooklyn has found her a job and arranged for her to live in a boarding house. And so as she sets sail, it's with very mixed emotions. Of course, the sadness at leaving, but also a sense of a new beginning, perhaps. And as she arrives in America, she begins to learn the ins and the outs, but at the same time, of course, dealing with this very depressive homesickness, which is understandable. But then she meets and falls deeply in love with a young Italian fellow. And just as her life seems to be coming around and adapting to America, tragic news from Ireland sends her back. Mm-hmm. And once again, those ties that bound her emerge, and she's faced again with these mixed emotions. Does she stay or does she go back to America? And there's no spoiler here. The decision she must make, of course, is almost secondary to really the joy and the charm of watching her character develop. She's very bright, she's ingenuous, and she's vulnerable. But she's not gullible, and so we as the audience are rooting for her all the way, and ultimately when she does make that decision, we find that all we really cared about was she going to be happy?
Yeah, this is a film that in lesser hands across the board, everyone who worked on it, we would probably be saying is a nice film, a gentle film, and it's all of those things, but it's also, I think, an almost perfect film. It just drops you into these lives and you just carried away like I felt like just a leaf on a stream, just effortlessly being taken along in this flow of the world in which she walks and really impacted by it in stronger ways than the film would overtly suggest you should be.
Right,
which
right.
is part of its power, I guess.
And while the film is owned by Saoirse Ronan, the young woman who plays Eilish, there's a strong supporting cast, many of whom are Irish, and the American audiences won't really know. But there's Jim Broadbent, who plays the priest, and one of my favorites is Julie Walters, who runs the boarding house. And
oh, yes.
Oh, she was marvelous, wasn't she?
Practically steals the show.
Well, she does,
worth,
I think.
Worth the price of admission right there. This wonderful little evening meals with all of her boarders, all women, all young women that she's helping to shepherd through life.
Exactly.
Just hilarious conversation.
She's irascible, but she's kind-hearted. She's almost the mother hen, but boy, she's sharp-tongued. And as you say, while it is Ronan's movie, to say the least, she does dominate those boarding house scenes, and those are some of the best.
The gracefulness with which the story is told, too. I have to point out the cinematography by Eve Bellinger, who also shot Wild in the Dallas Buyers Club. You know, just everything in this film seems just lightly brushed with light. There's a naturalism to it that just captures those moments. And in each scene, it's a very unpretentious – everything in the film is very unpretentious. And its charms just completely work their way into you. It's one of those films that I was enjoying the first 30 minutes, but I was thinking, is there more here? And it's just one of those films that convinces you to let it take you on this journey.
It is a little slow beginning, but to me, the word that kept coming to me was soft. Mm. It was just soft throughout. It takes you
and not
to
in
that.
A bad way.
No, not in a bad way. No.
Well, this film is set in the 1950s, and looking at the immigrant experience, which is based around a single individual. Our next film, Trumbo, is also largely about a single individual. This one is a biopic about an actual individual, the screenwriter Dalton Trumbo, but a very different view of the 1950s and what was going on. It's hard to reconcile that these two Americas really existed. But they did, and that's part of the American experience. And the film Trumbo stars Bryan Cranston in the title character and another excellent supporting cast. This is a film that covers, for people who are familiar with the Red Scare, the Cold War, the blacklisting of so many in Hollywood. The blacklist was a literal list as well as a whispered list of people who were suspected or were communists or socialists or people fighting for workers' rights. Pretty much all you had to do was organize or around a labor movement and you could get blacklisted. But that meant that the studios would refuse to hire you, pay you, fire you. It's a period that in the film following Dalton Trumbo and his tumultuous years between 1947 when he is subpoenaed by the Congress, the House Un-American Activities Committee. He and a number of other prominent screenwriters and a few directors, the blacklist really started focusing on writers because the Writers Guild was highly involved in many of the other trade unions' efforts to get better wages out of Hollywood. So they went after them. But it's a frightening time to see the allegiance of central political figures in Washington with central media and entertainment figures in Washington. John Wayne and Ronald Reagan do not come off well in this film, but it tracks exactly with the history for the cause of overt patriotism. People did horrible things to ruin people's lives. And Dalton Trumbo, if this all sounds a bit heavy, it was a very heavy time. I think the film presents the history pretty even-handedly and sets it up for us. But the figure of Dalton Trumbo, which is the lens in which we watch all of this going down between 1947 and 1970, is such an engaging character. I mean, he is exactly. A larger-than-life, full Hollywood movie character, and everything that comes off his lips is this amazing dialogue. And I have to point out, the script, I thought, was just fantastic. And the screenplay is by John McNamara, which who's really mostly known for his television work, but he's able to cover a lot of ground and characters while remaining largely focused on this one central character of Dalton Trumbo and how hard it must be to put words into the mouth of what many consider one of the greatest screenwriters
exactly.
of all time.
Right, right. And his work stands as proof of that. It's amazing if one looks at the panoply of his writing, his screenplays, and of course brought out in the film are two of his most famous, which were Roman Holiday, mm-hmm. the Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn flick, and then Spartacus. But you had Exodus, you had war films, you had dramas, The Brave One, for which he won an Oscar ultimately. It just ran the gamut. And so the depth of his skill and artistry, it comes out in the film. Mm-hmm. Something I found interesting about this whole era is, and I feel guilty myself, is that at one time, no longer, but the idea that, well, why was the entertainment industry, they were targeted and everybody was so upset and it was not that big a tragedy. But when you realize these people, if their livelihoods were tied up with the studios and filmmaking and they couldn't work, there wasn't an alternative. It's not like they could work for a different newspaper or they could work for a different corporation.
For every central character like a Dalton Trumbo, there were literally hundreds of lower-scale jobs lost.
And exactly.
People's lives ruined. Some committed suicide. Families mm-hmm. disrupted. In the case of Trumbo and his nine other original subpoenaees to the Congress, they were actually held in contempt of Congress and spent 3 years battling appeals until 1950 when they lost at the Supreme Court for basically refusing to answer questions to Congress because they felt it was their constitutional right to believe whatever they wanted to believe in this country and that should not be criminalized. Mm-hmm. And they were actually sent to prison for several years.
Right.
It's hard to believe, but this was a time where there was a nebulous enemy enormous fear-mongering going on, I think a true assault on civil liberties, and its parallels with today and some of the rhetoric we have will leave a lot of listeners drawing a lot of conclusions for our own times. But again, this, I don't want to turn people off by thinking, you know, this is a history lesson. It certainly is, that this is a furrowed brow drama. It certainly is, but it's also incredibly entertaining because the screenplay is so good. And Bryan Cranston as Dalton Trumbo, who I guess in life was a fairly positive fellow because he yes. goes through all of these travails with great wit and ultimately triumphs, which is what every movie you want to end on a happy note. So there you have it. And right. a conciliatory note. Mm-hmm. Trumbo himself exactly. in 1970, the film ends with him giving a very famous speech in which he asked for people to find common ground again.
Exactly. Right. It is. It's uplifting, and it seems odd to say, but it is actually funny. I know when I saw it, numerous occasions in the audience laughing.
Yes.
Again, as you mentioned, his wit, just it shines in the film, and it really is truly entertaining and informative, and an important film for those reasons, too.
Two very highly recommended films this week in theaters now. Any short takes? We have a few seconds left, but anything you're watching or come across online that people
well,
should
you
check
know,
out?
For I'm pleased that Amazon Prime, one of the many new entities that are into original programming, has turned to children's programming. And I watched an episode of a new one called Everstar. It's about a young 12-year-old girl, Ainsley, who she with her friend George pilot a spaceship. And, of course, the story's tried and true, but the animation's delightful. Check it out.
And this is one of those new made-for-video-on-demand services.
Right, Amazon Prime.
Amazon. Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't help watching Trumbo and the role that Kurt Douglas plays in him getting his name and screen credit on Spartacus. And it's a delightful character actor in the film. But it took me back to the 1952 MGM film in which Kurt Douglas plays this backstabbing, ladder-climbing producer, sort of a rags-to-riches-to-rags story called The Bad and the Beautiful, which is available online for streaming. It's a great film. Also stars Dick Powell and Gloria Graham, who I believe won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress in that film. And amazing film. Made the same year as Singing in the Rain, another great movie about the movie business, which is a good segue because as a final program note, the Film Salon will screen the 1952 Technicolor film Singin' in the Rain tonight at 7:30 p.m. The musical comedy stars Gene Kelly, Donald O'Connor, and El Paso native Debbie Reynolds and chronicles Hollywood's transition from silent film to talkies with often hilarious results. The Film Salon meets at Trinity First United Methodist Church located at 801 North Mesa, and all screenings are free of charge. Gene, it's always good to have you in the studio to talk about movies. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. One of my favorite things to do.
I've been discussing two of the fine films hitting theaters this fall, Brooklyn and Trumbo, both films covering different aspects of the American experience mid-20th century. We also discussed the smaller screen recommendations, the animated children's show Everstar from Amazon, and the classic 1952 film about making movies, The Bad and the Beautiful, both available on various video-on-demand services. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.